Popo Molise and the group CEO, Mr. Montana, but also welcome members of community who are here. Critical is my colleagues, members of this portfolio committee, who actually with me will be able to interact with the presentation as it will be made by PRASA, but also say to members of the community who are here, we really rejoice to see that community members have got interest in what we are doing as a portfolio committee, but also we know that they will be able to convey proper messages to their communities. But the department led by the Acting Director General, you're also welcomed to this meeting. We are going to be starting and requesting PRASA to make a presentation to us, as we have requested, that we would really appreciate if they can be able come and brief us on their corporate strategy and their corporate plan for the year 2014-15, 2016-17. Without much ado, I would request the chairperson of PRASA, Mr. Popo Molise, to ride on, brother.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. My name, as has been indicated by the Chair, is Popo Molefe, newly appointed Chairman of PRASA. With me here is a delegation of PRASA. As you can imagine, getting into PRASA, I'm pretty much like you, busy familiarizing myself with the strategy, with the vision, with various business units of the organization. As a matter of fact, on Thursday and Friday, we have a major and thoroughgoing induction program happening for all the directors of the company. So I think I'm going to ask Chairperson, if you allow, a quick introduction by each member of our delegation. Not a CV, just a quick introduction. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. A quick one. We'll start with the group CEO.
Thank you, Montana, group CEO of PRASA, and I think she has been in this company, in this industry for the last decade, if I can remember. So I think that summarizes the chair. I'm from Mamelodi, Chair, the township in the east of Pretoria. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. My name is Mawethu Vilana. I'm the Acting Director General of the Department of Transport.
Morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Sipori Bagwane. I am the Acting Executive Manager responsible for special projects and policy analysis in the Office of the Director General of Transport.
Good morning, Chair Members. I'm J.D. De Villiers. I'm the Acting DDG for Rail Transport at the National Department of Transport.
Good day. I'm Godfrey Maluleke. I'm the Chief Director in the Department of Transport, responsible for rail transport.
Good morning. I'm Stephen Sangweni, President of South African Commuters Organization. I'm based in Soweto.
Morning, Chair. I'm Jomo Khasu. Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Ministry of Transport.
Thank you very much. I'm going to request members of the community and the media, if they are around, to introduce themselves, and then I would request members or honorable members to just, for the record, introduce themselves.
My name is Reverend Mark Lange. I'm from the United Commuter Voice in Praza. My name is Reverend Mark Larson. I'm from the United Commuter Voice in Praza.
My name is Brianda Mpele. I'm from UCV, not UCV, United Commuters Voice. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Monde. I'm Khalifi. I'm also in the office of the Director General. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me request honorable members, starting at my extreme left. Ishaela.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I am Sheila Kagosovita, a member of the Transport Committee. Thank you.
Honorable Hasinger.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'm Chris Hunsinger. Hello, CV.
Morning,
all.
Many of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Stelma Bega, the member of the committee.
Leonard Ramafakani, a member of the Transport Committee.
Pat Sibande, member of the committee.
Susa Kadebe.
Tigbara Mrawuzi, member of the committee.
Polibu Shielo, member of the committee. Thank you very much. Let me throw it back to you, Comrade Chairperson. You are right there as a back. You didn't even do yourself. If you can, and then we give it to the chairperson to continue with the work.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Mokha Tumufukin. I'm the spokesperson for PRASA.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Eddie Chinnipin. Well, I'm the General Manager in the Group CEO's Office of PRASA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mulife. Who are you?
Thanks, Chair. Anilumda Prasa, Parliamentary Liaison.
Chairperson, thank you. Honorable Chair, thank you very much. The CEO, Group CEO, Mr. Lange Montana, will lead the presentation, and to the extent that he needs support, we've got the executive team here that would add from time to time when it is necessary and respond to questions. I have the privilege of asking Mr. Montana to do the presentation.
Thanks, my brand new chairman. Chairperson of the committee and honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Just before, we're going to give you an hour to make a presentation so that members can be able to thoroughly engage with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I think the Chair is reaffirming my efficiency in presentation, but I'll be very brief. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, honorable members, for once again for the opportunity to address the committee. On PRASA's corporate plan, I need to just indicate that we have submitted, of course, a presentation. I must say that with the same information, of course, I've reorganized it for purposes of presentation. The same presentation, but I've reorganized the slides so that I can be optimal, because what we sent to members was quite a relatively long presentation. So I'm trying to avoid that. My apologies for that. And, of course, the editing that has taken place after I sent the presentation. The second issue, Chair, that I just want to, of course, emphasize the fact that The corporate plan and the corporate strategy that I'm going to summarize was tabled by the Honorable Minister of Transport at the beginning of the financial year. So that's what we're trying to present today. And I think that I'll present, of course, progress in some of the goals that we've set ourselves. I'm not dealing with everything in the corporate plan, but the key activities that defines our strategy, that's the approach we take. However, I think we'll be able to deal with the details in terms of when members have raised their questions beyond what I would have presented today. Thirdly, Chair, of course, the corporate plan is a short-term document that we're presenting. It speaks to the MTF period, the medium-term expenditure framework for 2014-15 to 2016-17. But behind that, the corporate plan, of course, is a long-term strategy, which is the strategic plan of PRASA, which he also was tabled to Parliament by the Minister of Transport, and some of the things that we'll be raising will, of course, be drawn from that long-term document. But the focus of the presentation would be, of course, on the corporate plan. Yes, taking into account, of course, that the committee is a new committee, I felt that, of course, I should dwell a bit into some of the background. Of course, PRASA was established in March 2009. So it's on its fifth anniversary this year, March 2009. We did celebrate the launch of PRASA early this year. And of course, the main purpose of establishing PRASA in terms of its mandate is to deliver passenger services, rail and bus services, and of course to be a government's champion in the transformation and integration of public transport. And if you read that together with the government's public transport strategy, you'll, of course, see the important role that PRASA has to perform to make sure that we deliver on those goals. Chair, in terms of the mandate, PRASA derived its establishment and mandate from the Legal Succession Act of 1989, but amended, of course, in 2008. And, of course, it says that we must provide, at the request of the Department of Transport, rail commuter services, which means services that we render in the metropolitan areas of the country, particularly the six metropolitan areas of Johannesburg, Pretoria, Botswana, Cape Town, Durban, East London, and Port Elizabeth. So I think those are the metropolitan areas. And secondly, of course, to provide long-haul passenger rail and long-haul bus services. As you know, that we also run the Translux intercity buses, which Translux as well as city-to-city buses as part of our family, as it were. Of course, the Act provides that we, in addition to this key mandates, we also ensure that we contribute to government socio-economic objectives in that way. Chair, this is a structure of PRASA. As you can see, that when we talk about PRASA, we talk about the if you look at the structure of PRASA, of course, as it is, we are mainly, you can summarize PRASA for what it is in terms of three things. We are a rail business, we are a bus business, and we are a property and asset business. So that effectively, this PRASA group represents those three primary activities, property, rail, as well as bus. In that way, and I think some of these brands are more familiar to people. I think that if you look at Translux and City to City buses under our Autopex subsidiary, if you look at the our rail business, mainly the Metro Rail as well as the long distance Shosholoza Bay, and of course if you look at some of our own properties, you see the stations as well as some of the assets that we own as PRASA. Okay, I think that I'll leave this. I think this highlight has given me problems. Apologies for that. So, of course, when you look at PRASA from since the base of the South African Rail Commuter Corporation, and I know that there are honorable members who are part of this committee in the past, like Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Sibande, of course, in the NCOP. We dealt with the SRCC when it was still a small organization, but if you look at the numbers as they are, you can see that the value of the assets have quite increased from 2006, from 7.1 billion rand, it moved to 15 billion rand, and as we speak today, we are talking about an organization which has just over 36 billion rand in 2020, by as at 31st of March 2014. So this has been massive growth, and I think it's been mainly driven by the investment, the increased investment in infrastructure by government. I think you'd recall that in between 2007 and 2010, government invested over 25 billion rands just to ensure that we upgrade the infrastructure and railways. And we've also done the valuation of some of the assets. We've also acquired, as we consolidate all passenger entities within PRASA, it shows that growth in the assets that we have. Of course, some of the key, I think that the honorable members would have seen that this is the assets that we, this is the assets that we have. We own, that is a mistake. It shouldn't be 22,000, it should be 2,230 kilometers. My apologies, there's an additional zero that finds its way there. As you know, in the country, we just got over 80,000 kilometers of rail track. The bulk of that owned by our sister company, Transnet. And of course, we own this located in the metropolitan areas of the country for commuter rail, whereas our long-distance rail services requires on travels on Transnet lines, as it were. We've got, of course, for Metro Rail, over 4,600 coaches, and for the long-distance trains, we've got over 1,000 passenger coaches and 124 locomotives, which is the where the traction is. We've got, of course, these buses. We've got over 700 buses. Of course, 560 of those buses are new. Those are the ones that we bought during the 2010 FIFA World Cup, and they, that's how we contributed to the success of the 2010 FIFA World Cup. In terms of passenger trips, of course, currently we are doing about 550, and when we operate at an optimum level, we do up to 643 million passenger trips on the Metro Rail side. Our bus service, as you can see, it has grown quite tremendously. In terms of passengers, but when it comes to the long distance, the socialists are made, you can see that in fact it has lost quite a lot of capacity over the years. In fact, it was doing over 3 million passengers and now it has gone down. So that is because of a number of factors. Part of it, of course, is that it is not a funded business, so you are not able to invest in new capacity. Part of it, of course, is the reliability that has to do with access to the network that is not owned by PRASA, and so it has come to not to be quite competitive. It may be cheap, but in terms of performance, in terms of competitiveness, it is not able to make inroads. It has shed quite a lot of things. We run over 498 stations, but I think now they've increased with the part of the consolidation. There's an additional station, so about 580 stations that we run. Of course, here I think that if you look at our strategic focus, what PRAS has been doing, and that's what underpins the corporate plan or corporate strategy. We've identified the need to deliver quality transport. Of course, we know that the passenger rail service or the railway system as a whole in the country is no longer as reliable as it was due to the aging of the infrastructure, the aging of the fleet itself. But I think that we've committed ourselves to ensure that there's quality transport services that we deliver. We of course want to set the business on a sustainable financial sustainability, and key to that is unlocking the value and restructuring the property assets that we have. And of course, thirdly, Chair, and I'll speak quite a lot on this issue, over the past few years, we spent a lot of of resources as PRASA, as a country, refurbishing the old stock, the old infrastructure. But I think that the new strategy emphasizes replacement of the assets as well as introducing new operating systems, and that I'll deal with as we proceed. So that has been the key focus over the past 3 years, and that they define our strategy of us moving towards the quality transport services for South Africans. Of course, the strategic objectives here, I won't of course repeat them. I think that the goals are very clear that we set ourselves, and they are part of the documents, and I think I'll go into that during our conversation later on. So of course, in 2010, when the board approved the three focus areas, there was a situation, a practical situation that faced the company. The first one being that the Auditor General had raised the issue of a going concern at that time, but of course I must assure the committee that we've dealt with that, we've overcome it, we're no longer facing any going concern issue. We had the liquidity challenge at that time, a cash crunch, we couldn't meet all our obligations, the board had to deal with that. And of course that the our property portfolio was not generating the kind of resources that we require. So if you look at our property portfolio, only about 20% of that property portfolio was commercialized, which means generating money. The rest was not generating money. You had to maintain it, you had to pay rent and taxes on it, you had to provide security, but so you were subsidizing it quite significantly. So that was contributing to the financial position. Of course, there was, after 2010, a massive decline in passenger trips from 643 million to about 490 million passenger trips. And of course, that there was an acceleration in the decline of the fleet and infrastructure, which means the reliability, the low levels of reliability had intensified. And most importantly, I think honorable members were aware we were still facing other problems in respect of commuters being unhappy with the poor levels of reliability, and they took even some of the matters to their own hands, destroyed assets, banned trains, and all of those things. Of course, the main issue at the heart of our business, as you know, metro rail constitute a significant part of the business. Yes, we are a group of companies, we've got bus, we've got property, but if you can't fix metro rail as it is, you are not addressing the problem of facing. And we know what the problems are. I think that this is what we see every day. We see trains that are extremely overcrowded in the peak hour. We see trains that are breaking down, as you can see here, people on the platform, but they're not getting into that train because it's broken down. And you see the kind of negative consequences that we face. But what is at the heart of the problem? And I think I put only one slide. In the past, other honorable members would recall that I used to spend a lot of time talking about the problems and the challenges of our railways. But today I've only put one slide, precisely because I think that we are beginning to overcome those. So I'm not going to take a lot of our time onto that. But at the heart of the problem we want to replace is that the current railway system, whether you're talking about infrastructure, you're talking about technology, you're talking about operating systems, has reached the end of its design lifespan. It means that it cannot support the country moving forward. It has to be replaced as speedily as possible. And that is why the problems that we encounter reflect that the system now can no longer carry us forward, that level of reliability. So I want to repeat that the probability of failure of both the fleet as well as the infrastructure is 100%. It doesn't mean that every single train that you undertake it breaks down or there's failure, no. But it means the chances of there being a breakdown, of course, is 100% chances. So it tells you that the level of the levels of reliability have dropped so significantly that you cannot run a system in that way to support the economy, to support the growth, as it were. And of course, such a system brings high cost of maintenance. So the cost of maintenance is huge. To keep it going, and so the sooner you replace, the better for that. There are other factors, for example, including the fact that the economic and structural viability, and more specifically I'm talking about the special arrangements where people live far from places of work, they all contribute to that. And of course, you can see that one of the major contributing factors to these poor levels of reliability is the fact that the infrastructure, the technology that drives this infrastructure, it's old, it's 1950s technology. We got that from the British, they're no longer using it, they've long abandoned it, we are still using it today. So, Chair, I think that these are some of the things. Of course, the average age of the fleet is 40 years, but I again always emphasize that average tend to be very misleading because you bring the total and divide. But if you go into the actual, and I think in past presentations we've gone and show the age profile, and you see that most of the trains are actually due for retirement as it is. They shouldn't be running the way we do. So what have we done with all of these issues? And that is why I say I don't want to dwell much into the problems. We've spoken about them. We looked at a number of interventions over the years. Between 2006 and 2009, we were given a mandate to ensure that we stabilize commuter rail, which means metro services. And I must say, Chair, that we have done that. There was a lot of the trains or coaches were in a complete state of disrepair. We had to fix that. I think over 40% of the fleet was just not working. So we had to invest quite significantly in terms of that. There was a lot of loss of critical skills with a lot of the skilled engineers, technicians, artisans, and some of them leaving the country to go to the UK or countries like Australia and that kind of thing. And of course, there was a lot of loss of market share. Rail used to do over almost 800 million passenger trips. And today, I can see that it's lost if it's doing 550 kilometers of that. Of course, you can break it down in terms of if you want to do a detailed transport analysis, you, for example, look in terms of the morning peak, afternoon peak, or you can look at the rail share of public transport market. It will give you the indicators. Of course, if you break it down in terms of city to city by city or province by province, you'll see that there are provinces where rail does well than in other parts of the provinces. For example, in Cape Town, you know that the rail accounts for over 50%, almost 58% of the public transport market goes to rail. So we're doing quite well here. And also that is linked to the fact that a lot of people in Cape Town have got access to rail than other parts of the country. If you look in Johannesburg, you look in Durban, you look in Pretoria, you'll see that people's access to rail is over, in fact, 60%. So which means in Cape Town it's 26%. Only 26% of people in the Cape metropole do not have access to rail. So 76% do have. So within 2 to 3 kilometers, they can access rail. But whereas if you go to other parts of the country, it's the opposite, where you find between in Gauteng about 63% of people do not have. And it shows the changes in land use pattern, that rail remains fixed, and there have been developments away from that. So our land use and our transport provision are not as integrated as it is, and that impacts negatively on rail. So, Chair, we dealt with the stabilization of commuter rail. Of course, we spoke about PRASA being 5 years, so we were able to deliver on the consolidation that Cabinet resolved on in December 2004. And, of course, we have embarked on the replacement strategy, particularly with the buying of the new trains and other things to ensure that we reverse the underinvestment. As you know, that over 35 years of underinvestment in our railway system. The last train, as you saw in the previous slide here, if you see in the previous slide here, I think that you see that the last train was last bought in the 1980s. So that's where it is. And these are the trains that are running here in Cape Town, particularly what we call the silver trains running on the central line here in the Cape. So, Chair, what have we done? What has been part of our strategic interventions? We, in line with that strategy that the board adopted, we implemented a new operating model for PRASA. We created a new, what you call, PRASA Rail Operations Division to manage both the long distance as well as the as well as the commuter trains. We restructured our property and our asset portfolio, where we changed the mandate of us, of Intersite. For example, in the past, Intersite used to be the property management portfolio, but now we've changed it to the asset investment part, and we divisionalized the entire property portfolio under a new division that we call Cluster CRES, CRES standing for Corporate Real Estate Solutions. And then, of course, we embarked on a new rolling stock acquisition process, a signaling upgrade program, infrastructure modernization program, and I think this third leg on the modernization of our railways is what will deliver the modern train system for South Africa in the coming few years. So, Chair, what have we done properly? I think that we've had some of our own achievement. If you look over the 5 years, we are being able to arrest the decline of commuter rail. I must emphasize, Chair, that Metro Rail is no longer falling apart. But I must hasten to add, I must add quickly to point out that it is still not yet delivering quality services to citizens. There's a distinction. It was falling apart as an entity because most of the trains were not there. They were in a state of disrepair. They were outside. Yes, it doesn't. We haven't won back that reliability. But as a unit, as a division, we are no longer having Metro Rail on the verge of collapse, and I think that's one of the most important things. And the reason why I'm emphasizing that, because the cost to the country and to the economy of Metro Rail falling apart, I think would have been quite huge. So I think government's mandate for us to ensure that we arrest that, I think it was very important. Now we can build on that success to ensure that we then modernize that commuter rail services as it is. Yes, over the 5 years, we've built a new public entity, and that public entity, Chair, I think that with the kind of asset that I've just mentioned, we've increased the size of our network, so it means, therefore, that we're moving forward and not back. And I spoke about the increase in the value of the assets. I think that how we unlock that to achieve our socio-economic and transport objectives then becomes very crucial. We've introduced new passenger services in some corridors that were not there since the last 5 years. And I think, Chair, that today there are more chances of getting a train than in 2005, 2006 as a result of that. And of most importantly for our strategy, we have laid the foundation of a modern commuter rail system. Chair, I think that the transformation of Metro Rail, I think that particularly with the commuter rail system, the 51 billion rand new program to buy new trains, is a major catalyst for transforming Metro Rail services. And I think that's what I want to focus on as well. So, Chair, to summarize it, we have entered and signed a contract to buy 600 new modern commuter trains. That contract was, we signed a commercial contract last in October, and of course that it was gazetted by the Minister of Finance in April this year. And of course, what it meant is that we've entered now rich financial close. What it simply means is that the work to build the factory for these new trains has begun. And of course, building these new trains in our country, as it were, we are no longer planning for them. It means that South Africans will have, starting from 2015, 2016, we'll start to introduce new modern trains of high quality, equivalent to the HAL train and other commuter trains around the world, and that contract is signed and sealed, and I'll talk about it. So that is a major issue. We have, Chair, started, of course, bought 70 new modern locomotives to support to rebuild our long-distance trains, and I know that the Chair, the President of the South African Commuter Organization, has been talking about urban-rural linkages, and these 70 locomotives, very dynamic, relatively high speed, will be able to deliver the kind of linkages that we're talking about in the country. And Baba Sangweni, I'm not talking about 2016, we received the first locomotive at the end of September, and we'll have received 20 of these by March 2015, and therefore start to introduce new services around the country, particularly regional services that we've been talking about. So I think this modernization program is beginning to deliver some of the goods that we want. We've started started to, of course, deliver on the interlocking signaling system. As we speak, Siemens is implementing a 3.7 billion rand signaling system for Gauteng. We are replacing the entire signaling system. Work is moving quite speedily, very fast. We are doing the same here in the Western Cape, a 2.8 billion rand replacement of the old signaling that is done by Thales. And of course, we've got we're replacing the entire signaling of the commuter rail system in KZN in the Thekwini region, and that program is being run by Bombardier. We are also doing the rail communication where we are bringing the new GSMR, which is a modern communication in the railway environment, particularly between the train controls. Centers with the train drivers. We are doing that. We are introducing speed gates, and of course, we are building new generation stations. As you can see, for example, with Bridge City that we launched in October last year, and I think that some of the honourable members were part of that. It's a state of the art. It's part of a modern economic zone, and that's what we want to see, the link between railways and those economic zones that are there. On the financial side, of course, we have been able to restructure the balance sheet so that we can ensure that the capital structure of PRASA, I think in the past we used to have a lot of assets in this business, but that has been idle, that we're not supporting the business, and that was costing us a lot of money on the signaling side. So we continue doing that, and we are revaluing some of the assets, and we are buying them. So we are buying some of the high-yielding leases, long-term leases that we entered with the private sector. So that is key in ensuring that we build financial sustainability for this new entity that we're building. Of course, on the operational side, we've introduced what we call a five-point plan to ensure that we deal with the day-to-day challenges that are there. We don't say we are focusing on the new infrastructure, new trains, and abandon the key thing. And one of the major things, of course, is to improve on-time performance, is to ensure that we reduce on overcrowding through scheduling of trains differently, also reducing the travel times for people, is to accelerate the infrastructure, to improve on security of passengers and assets, and of course is to ensure that we ensure operational safety in terms of safety in operations, so that we reduce derailments, collusions, and all of those things in line with the requirements of the rail safety regulator. So this is our short-term plan. So as we invest in new capacity, we still have to address the immediate problems that we face. So, of course, one of the key things that I touched on is the fact that when we looked at our business, we realized that we cannot put the burden of transport, of the cost of transport, on poor households who live far from places of work. One of the major things that has been done around the world is that they focus on ensuring that the property side, the stations and the land around the station, the real estate, plays important part. In fact, if many businesses, railway businesses, the real estate contribute up to 30% of the revenue of those businesses that are there. And you can see some of the things that we're doing. Some of the key stations were commercializing, bringing in businesses, bringing in the banks, making sure that we generate money. We are redeveloping some of the major stations, particularly not from our own budget, but entering into contracts with the private sector developers who can mobilize the money and the skills to redevelop some of the stations. And 25 major stations have been put into a program that we call the National Station Precinct Development Program. And of course, we are buying back some of those high-yielding development leases where there is a lot of cash that it should be coming into PRASA and not sitting outside. And of course, one of the major things is that we are still looking at a potential or possibility for a strategic equity partner on part of our property portfolio. This we think that will change the income profile and ensure that we don't get increased income revenues. As PRASA, in the past, we used to get 220 million rand as income from our properties. We're now pushing it to 500 million rand. But by 2018, we think if we restructure it successfully, we should be able to generate at least 1.8 billion rand out of
our own property portfolio. And I think that is something that requires a lot of support, both from government as well as from parliament, as it were. I think that the some of the successes that we've seen recently, of course, is the conclusion of that procurement process. I think that it's been a very complex procurement process. I spoke about the signaling, but I just want to highlight here that even as we prepare for the new trains, we continue to refurbish. Yes, our strategy is about replacement, but we still refurbish in some of the existing fleet. As you can see, in 2012-2013, we spent 2 billion rands refurbishing some of these coaches so that we bring them back onto the thing. And if you analyze our financials, which I think that they will come at a later stage once the Minister of Transport has tabled our annual financials, you can also see the increase in the value of our investment property, that we have an investment property that was at about 924 million, and that is sitting at about 2.5 billion rands. So it tells you that you are strengthening the balance sheet of the company in a very big way and increasing it on the revenue side, as it were. Our capital expenditure has increased. Of course, the operational side doesn't match that, which creates a bit of dynamic, but it tells you that we are investing in the assets of a modern commuter and rail system moving forward. Chair, I won't go into the detail. I just want to go into some of these successes in terms of program by program to give a sense of how we're implementing things. And the first thing, of course, is our rolling stock fleet renewal program. This fleet renewal program is, Chair, I think that it's not a 10-year, it's a 20-year program. We need 7,224 new modern coaches for Metro Rail alone. And as you can see, Chair, that the amount that was identified in a feasibility study done by PRASA, National Treasury, Department of Transport, indicated, and sorry, the DTI and DPE, indicated that over that 20-year period, we'll need about 123 billion rand of investment. Of course, we can't do this program as we can't contract over a 20-year period because it's a longer period. The fluctuations are huge, including on the financial side, the risks are huge. So we're implementing that program over two 10-year contracts, and I'll give you an update as to where we are. But in essence, we are buying new trains that will replace the entire fleet of Metro Rail over a period of time. And of course, that Chair, one of the major things that we are pursuing, we are not just buying trains, but we are ensuring that we implement the government's national industrial development strategy, or what you call the the industrialization strategy, IPAP 2, industrial participation program. And I think you can see there that not only are we building a factory to build these trains, so 97% of these coaches will be built locally, and Chair, we said that we want all at least 65% of the components to be produced locally. In the contract, we've exceeded that. It's now 70%. And of course, that the most important thing is the jobs and the skills. Over 20 years, the target is 65,000. But in the first 10-year contract, we're looking at 33,000 jobs with 19,500 new skills in the form of engineers, in the form of artisans and other technical skills. Chair, of course, these are the trains, but as you can see, we've already signed this 10-year contract with Gibela Rail Consortium that is led by Alstom, and these are the coaches that we have, and I think that is the most important thing that we have. Chair, this I want to draw honorable members, because I think that is very important for moving forward. This graph shows the replacement strategy. As you can see, this is the existing fleet. We'll start to introduce the first trains in 2015, late 2015, and we'll roll them out over that 10-year period, as you can see, until about particularly 2025.
This will be the first 3,600 coaches here, and then of course the second contract will come in there. But you can see, Chair, that as we buy these new trains, we are still going to rely on the current fleet for many years to come. As you can see, 2033, that's when we are going to replace the last of the current fleet. So what it means is that there must be a high level of maintenance of the current fleet, so that we don't say we are waiting for the new trains and we allow the current fleet to collapse. So over the next, as you can see, that the next particularly 7 to 10 years, our maintenance and partly the refurbishment of the existing fleet becomes of strategic importance. If you drop the ball here, what you're going to have is that you're going to have, when the new trains arrive, the railway system will not be in place. It is a major risk to manage during this this particular period. Chair, you see the trains as they are, and you can see that these trains, as you can see, per six car train, currently we use longer trains, but their loading capacity is very low. With the new trains, of course, you can see that it gives will increase the capacity of this train of per train per coach rather by 15%, which is very huge, and we'll have the metro train as well as the metro express services that are there. And you can see on the energy saving side it's around 31%, meaning therefore that these trains are not as heavy as the current train, so the energy efficiency is good. The energy regeneration, particularly out of the braking system, is very good. And of course the fact that it will be more aluminium than heavy rail, it tells you that we are going to have a lot of that thing. They've been designed for the next 40 years, so if you include the proper maintenance, you'll be able to run these trains up to about 56 years. So you can see that if you look at the Vision 2050 that you're talking about, these are the trains on the commuter side, and that will be the backbone of your public transport, as it were. And of course, from an operations point of view, these trains are going to be very important in terms of increasing the efficiencies of metro rail and operation costs, as it were. So we need an operation plan that supports that. When you look at the driver cab, one of the major things with the modern trains is a driver cab that supports this kind of a system. And I think that as we do the design reviews for these new trains, we do send people, including drivers, to go and review the driver cab, so that it provides for passenger, for driver comfort, but also it has got the screens that provide the information and everything. And of course that will be supported by train driver simulation, so that you can see the operating conditions as they are, and you are able to be in control. Of course, these trains, they come with what you call a automatic train control system. And one of the major things about an automatic train control system is that if a driver, the electronics would have loaded the track information. If the running speed is 90 or 100 on that corridor, a driver can't run at 140, because this train will automatically apply brakes. If there's if a train comes within a certain radius of another train to avoid collisions, it will also apply brakes. So from a safety point of view, I think that is very important. From also a safety point of view, no commuter can hang out of this train because it's not possible, and you can't open the doors on these trains except either by a train driver himself. The current doors, as you know, is the old technology. If you put a lot of pressure, they give in. Even if a train leaves a depot with the doors functioning, but the door mechanism, if you put pressure, it opens, and that is why, particularly for the young people, they enjoy hanging out from this door. You are not able to do that on this train as it were. I wanted to show you another feature which is very important from a safety point of view. Is this one. As you can see, this train, you are able to see right throughout the train. In the current trains, they are closed. Now, one of the major things is that in the off-peak hour, in the off-peak, particularly in the early hours of the morning, because crime in rail, you don't find it in the peak hour. Serious crime, you find it in the early hours of the morning, in the off-peak, during the day when there's a few people traveling, or in the after the peak in the evening. Now, one of the major things is that people commit crimes because you can't see throughout the coaches. These ones will have cameras, and you can see through this train. things. And one of the major things is that if someone commits a crime is captured on camera, they'll not be able to go out of this train until, of course, the next station. And at that time, security, because it will be linked to operational systems, would have been able to be communicated as it were. We are now currently busy with the design review to make sure that all our requirements are met, and of course the rail safety regulator is already involved to make sure that all its requirements are accommodated. Before we do that, we are also engaging with the organizations of people with special needs to make sure that all those requirements, particularly the level of the train, and also for those with poor eyesight, as well as sound, so that those are factored into the construction of this train. So, of course, Chair, the reason why we are not building 100%, but we are building about 95-97% here, is because this factory will start to produce the trains only in 2016 in real terms. So we'll start to build, now we're busy with the EIA process, we'll start to build. So the first train that will come out of that factory would be in 2016. But the first 20 trains, which amounts to about 180 coaches, is what we'll get from Brazil before we can start our own production line, so that we can introduce. We can't wait till 2016 because we have to start to introduce the trains much earlier, as it were. So this factory, we built it in Danata Park. The site has been identified. We're working with the Ekurhuleni municipality. And I think that we are moving with speed onto that. So I don't know what happened to my slide, but I think we have already started with this what I spoke about. This is a modern signaling system that are there, so that you can control your train movement. Let me reemphasize the importance of signaling. Signaling is very important when you want to run trains faster, when you want to move your trains safely, and most important, if you want to increase the frequencies on your system. So there's a huge impact. If you want to run a train, for example, currently people wait 15, 20 minutes at the station in the peak hour. Our goal is that you must have a train every 3 to 5 minutes in the peak hour. But the signaling system will enable you to do that. That is why we have in the short term invested over 7 billion rand in the form of this contract here, which are currently being implemented. And we'll see some of the elements of this coming into operations in the new financial year, and this work that is happening there. This is in Gauteng, in fact, I think it's an old one. Currently, this building is now very high. The Minister of Transport will be visiting this facility as part of a 2014 October Transport Month program. And I think this is a center, what we call Gauteng Nerve Center, where we'll be able to connect all the railway tracks onto this facility and be able to control trains from one point. Currently, we are not able to do that. We are able to, the train control officer in Pretoria can see a train up to Kalfontein. After Kalfontein, he cannot see. The guys from Johannesburg can only control the train even in its motion, up to Kalfontein. But beyond that, they cannot see. Now, with this system, we'll be able to see each and every train as it moves in the whole of Gauteng and manage it in a more modern sense of the word. And I think I'm assuming that the members will be invited to come and see this facility. I think that has been built in, as I said, the Gauteng Nerve Center and Kalfontein in Gauteng. Of course, this is the building chair. I think that that's where we're going to put all the modern equipment. It's unlike the old system where train control officer kicks up a point and say, Mr. Molefe, now I'm passing over the train to you. You must take it over. We know that it has resulted in accidents, for example, in Pine Dean and those areas where a train, before it clears the section, another one is allowed and you have a lot of human error. This system will eliminate all of that in line with what is being done all over the world. Of course, one of the major things for the new trains to be introduced is not only the signaling, it's the new depots. We need to build new depots in Bramfontein, which is at the heart of our operation, in Salt River here, Springfield in Durban, and as well as, of course, in East London. And I think, Chair, we are already out on tender and finalizing some of these because they need to be built at least from early next year, so
so that by the end of the financial year, by the end of the year, not financially, by the end of the year when we bring some of the first coaches, we can be able to maintain and part of that. So this is one of the major preconditions for the successful delivery of our new modern trains as it were. The current depots that we have around the country cannot support the new trains. And they are not even efficient. They don't have the tooling and the equipment and the skills to be able to maintain the trains at the level that we want. So that is one of the major things that we are rolling out. Chair, of course, one of the major things that we have to implement is the upgrade of the tracks themselves. And by that, I must emphasize to Honorable, I'm not referring to the broader gauge, the existing tracks, so that they can take speeds up to of between 120 and 160, because these new trains will be running them. They'll be designed for 160, 120 kilometers on the commuter network, but they are certain long distance, like if you look at Durban to Stanga, it's a very long corridor. Perianakin, Johannesburg, Mabopane to Pretoria, 52 kilometers. They should be able to up the speed to up to 160 kilometers per hour on those commuter runs. So we are putting a lot of money, and as you can see in the FTF, we've allocated 101.6 billion rand for that. The other program, of course, for us, I think, is on the station side of things. I see that in my reorganization of this, I've left out a slide, but here we're putting 135 stations on the key corridors where we're going to introduce the first trains to update some of this. I mean, let me give you an example. In Gauteng, for example, the corridor from Mabopane into Pretoria Station, from Pretoria Station into Germiston, from Germiston into Park Station, from Park Station into Naledi Station in Soweto. That corridor is a high-volume corridor which will see the first trains being introduced. So it means the infrastructure, the depots, the tracks, the stations, should complement the modernity of these trains that we're going to do. So there will be a massive thing. We've identified, of course, in KZN, there's from KwaMashu in the north to Durban Station to Umlazi is an important corridor. And, of course, when we talk about KwaMashu, we are also including the other slip link to Bridge City. So all of that corridor is very important. It's also going to be the corridor we're going to introduce the first train. And, of course, thirdly, it's going to be in the Western Cape, where when we talk about the Khayelitsha, Kapstinklep corridor into Philippi, coming into Nyanga and into Cape Town, is going to be an important corridor. So these are corridors where we must prepare for this new train when they start to come in 2015, 2016. And I think that we are hard at work, Chairperson, in terms of making sure that we lay the ground for this kind of work. So if you look at, and I'll talk a bit about the investment. I've spoken about the property side. It's one of the major things where we are bringing in a lot of changes. As it were, our real estate strategy is an important pillar of the sustainable business moving forward. So we've got, for example, these development leases. Over 1,655 of these development leases. Their value is at 6 billion rand. They belong to PRAS. And they generate about 700 million rand. But currently, this revenue doesn't come to us. It goes to those who hold these leases with us. And some of them are for long periods of time. So we have gone into this space to start to analyze some of them, to buy back so that we can buy back some of this revenue and so that we can see it on our books. And so it will be part of our income statement moving forward. And I think that for any investor, when they see a huge balance sheet and they see these huge revenues and cash flows, they get attracted and they say, we want to partner with you. So that is going to be very important from that perspective. Last financial year, we bought 11 of these development leases. So we start to see some of those numbers coming in the next financial year. And, of course, we'll start to see those in the balance sheet as it is. But we've made a commitment that depending on the availability of capital, we'll buy between 2 and 5 development leases per annum as part of strengthening our financial position. And that, of course, is subject to the discussions with our our shareholder minister, as it were. Now, Chair, you can see that if you look, and I think I want to show that we are not talking about promises about this thing in the future. If you go to Cape Town Station here, you'll see that we have spent over 500 million rands upgrading the station this side. And I think it is a modern station. But if you go to the, I'm not sure if it's the south, the other end, which used to be the old section that was meant for the black people there, you'll see that we are doing what you call parade concourse. There's a massive construction that we're involved in now. And I think that you'll see that there will be businesses, including your retail stores, coming into that space as part of generating that money. If you come to Park Station, you'll see that we've made major things. Your banks are there, your Burger King, they're all located in there. And I think that we're starting to get per square meter, we're starting to get the real money. It's going to take some time, but very vital for us. Devon Station, you can see that we've also changed there. And I think that when honorable members visit our own environment, they'll see the kind of work that we're doing on the real estate side, Chair. Of course, let me say that in the short term, we are implementing, Chair, quite a number of things, both on the capital side, because in the short term, we've got what you call CIP, Capital Improvement Program. This is money we've set aside. And I think in our last ex-co meeting, we've actually increased this money by an additional 300 million rands to 800. These are short-term interventions to ensure that we solve the problems as we face them. So these are safety critical projects, and these are agents so that we can solve some of the things that undermine the performance of the current system. We don't want to wait for tomorrow, but we've got to deal with that. And I think you can see, particularly on the tracks, we've got a lot of problems. Whilst we have increased the reliability of some of the fleet, the infrastructure is giving you, because we haven't maintained it historically at the level that is required. And I think that we are putting in a lot of money. It's key for the continuous operation of the current environment, but also for the reliability and safety of the system. Chair, of course, in our own strategy, one of the major things is that we cannot talk about the commuter rail system in the metropolitan areas. We have to talk about the linkages between the long distance, the intercity travel, between the urban metropolitan centers and some of our rural areas and rural towns. And I think, Chair, that is a major issue that we are working on. We of course, Chair, unfortunately, this service is currently not funded. We are talking to the Department of Transport that we get treasury support for it. It is a major issue. All in all, of course, you need 1.2 billion rands to run it. Chair, this is very important because, particularly for the transport committee, that if you say we want to shift volume traffic from road to rail, we need to ensure that we've got a reliable long distance service, and that is very important that we've got the right investment in it. And of course, we are planning to introduce 8 regional services starting from this year when we receive some of the new locomotives that are there. So, Chair, I think that we're working on that. So that is one of the major progress update. And so I want to assure Baba Sangweni that we are not killing the long distance. Yes, I think it is a It's currently ICU, but we think that with some of the interventions, including buying the new locomotives, will be able to save it from there. On Moloto, there's been quite a lot of discussions about it. I know that honourable members have been pushing quite aggressively since last year, but I want to say that this project is back on track. Of course, it's not a short-term program. It's a long-term intervention into the broader Ikangala region in the first phase. And in the long run, of course, the second phase must link to Limpopo, Skukune, as well as beyond. So it's an important project for us. Chair, we've been doing a lot of planning, but I must report that there is now agreement in government that this project must be implemented as speedily as possible. Of course, there's a lot of preparatory work that needs to be done for this project, and I must say that the Minister of Transport is preparing formally, and she has already written to BRASA to prepare and establish what we call a project implementation management office which we have now already established, and I think that in the coming few days or weeks, she'll be handing over the project formally to us so that we can do. So we're beginning to see. Of course, I know on the ground, Chairperson, that people are saying we want to see the actual work being done on the ground. Of course, there's still a lot of preparations, and I think that as soon as we get what we call treasury approval at the end of September, beginning of October, we should be able to then develop an actual implementation plan, including, of course, stakeholder engagement with the communities on the ground. Of course, it is not only a rail solution. The Minister of Transport has emphasized that part of that will include the restructuring and the strengthening of the rail road side of things, including looking at the bus services that are there that are currently run by PATCO, and of course, including also upgrading the roads as it were. So this is the intermodal solution that has been looked at, with some of them coming much earlier, and because the rail construction will take its own time, would fit into some of those initiatives. But those are currently underway, and I think that probably the Minister of Transport, when she does a handover to PRASA, and as well as in the context of treasury approval, she'll provide additional information in terms of that. So this project is on course. Chair, I think some of my slides are not standing. This slide was part of the long distance, so I think that I've mixed that up. And this slide, Chair, shows some of the corridors that on the long distance side that we're going to have when we strengthen the long distance side, as it were. These are the some of the corridors that we're talking about that we need. Chair, 5 minutes, Chair. Of course, let me emphasize, Chair, that when we look at our corporate plan, or rather our long-term strategic plan, it recognizes that when we deal with long-distance intercity travel, the future of long-distance travel is not going to lie in this current system that we have. It's going to lie in high-speed railways, and the reason for it are provided here, the advantages and the benefits of high-speed railways, including on, of course, in terms of the value of technology, including on adding on the competitiveness of rail against both rail, road, and air, and most importantly, that it will ensure that you unlock rural corridors. I mean, if you look at the corridors, for example, on the Ekangala to Skukune, you look at some of the corridors on northern Natal, the introduction of high-speed rail is a major opportunity, particularly with real estate, and we think that is very important. It's also very important on the job creation side, because high-speed railways requires high maintenance teams that are there, and not short-term, but quality jobs that people are talking about. Then the high investment in high-speed becomes a very important part of that, and I've already given some of those, so that shows how my slides were quite messed up in terms of that. So in South Africa, I think, Chair, we do require, in our strategic plan of process, we need a bold decision to say that we are going to require an integrated network, but that integrated network is going to be the current high-speed, Cape Gauge network for the commuter rail side, but also that you need to a high-speed network, particularly for intercity travel in the future. And I think that is something that we need to look at. If you look at countries like China and Spain, the countries that have made enormous progress in the growth of the economy, they've done that as the backdrop of a massive investment in a high-speed network. I know some people say it is a luxury. Say it is not a luxury. It's actually a requirement of our time. And I think that from a planning point of view, we need to ensure that we start to provide for all of that. So what does it mean in conclusion? Of course, I still have more slides, and I think the committee secretary will print this particular presentation for members to look at, because what follows is going to be more details. But let me say that our rolling stock fleet renewal, particularly for the replacement of the commuter metro rail fleet, is a very important catalyst for changing, for transforming commuter rail in the country. But, Chair, it will create the conditions for the emergence of a public transport, integrated public transport that the Department of Transport speaks about. It will also ensure that rail fulfills its mandate as a backbone of public transport. At this point in time, it is not doing that effectively. Other than in the Western Cape, in the rest of the country, it is not doing that quite effectively as it is. And also, it's important to understand that even if we were to bring these new trains by themselves, they are not going to change our commuter system. They'll set the condition. But you also need to change and transform our own organization. You need to look at the issues about the nature of the business. You need to ensure that you take a number of things, one of them being to transform the culture of the organization to be a customer-centric business. You need to ensure that you start to reskill your employees with particularly the right kind of skills to support this new technology coming. So your training and development plan becomes very important. You need to look at leadership development in the business. You need change management so that our own employees, but also our own customers. So you need to have to work with organizations like the South African Commuter Organization, the United Voice of Commuters, to make sure that we bring new culture. For example, are we going to allow, if we want these new trains to be cleaned and everything, are we going to allow people to eat in these trains? It's going to be a major issue. Okay? Should people eat peanuts, throw them all over the place? It's something that we have to deal with and start to regulate. Are we going to allow people graffiti on these trains? And I think the paint is because you want an environment that is clean, that encourages people to move into that. So it will not be a change only in terms of our own employees, but a major cultural change on the part of our own customers, and therefore we need to work with the customers, we need to work with commuter structures to making sure that we achieve that goal as it were. The cost, when you bring this kind of system, the major risk, and that will be my final point, Chair, these are major risks that we have in the presentation. We've identified a number of risks, but one of those risks I've already mentioned is that if we don't manage the current fleet in terms of maintenance and refurbishment, we're not going to have a successful transition to a new environment. So that requires that PRASA has got the right kind of capacity to be able to continue to do that. The second one, Chair, is that the introduction of these trains can be done in an uncoordinated, haphazard way. A lot of people we've seen in other countries, when a new trains are being introduced, what they simply do, they don't want to get into the old trains. They want to get into the new train. Now, at the beginning, we won't have all the new trains. We're going to have few. So it means we have to put these trains on corridors which the pressure is different, and that we'll be able to test whether how we can operate on it as it were. The other risk is that how are we going to put these trains together with the new old trains? Because let me tell you, you can have a new train with people, it's moving smoothly, but if an old train breaks in front of that old train, there's no movement into that. And also it's going to be even worse that if our signaling system is not ready in time, because remember, signaling system gives you the flexibility to operate up and down. It also means that if this line is not operating, you can put a train on a different corridor, on a different line. Currently with Metro Rail, if one system fails, one line fails, there's no flexibility. All the trains must come to a standstill. So that infrastructure program becomes very important. Or else just to introduce new trains and things that are going to solve the problem, actually we're going to have a lot of challenges. But Chair, I won't go much into that. And of course, some of this is information that you provide. But I think the committee secretary will provide the updated and revised presentation that we started with the chairman. I think that's what we have. I tried to summarize within the time given to me, but hopefully I would have touched on the most critical issues that are relevant for the discussion of the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues. There we are. I'm going to allow members to interact with the presentation. I will start with Honorable Teko, Honorable Husinga, Honorable De Freitas. The line goes this way.
Just
give each one of you just 3 minutes of speaking time, so that we can be able to cover almost all of us.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm not sure whether I will make the 3 minutes that you're asking for. Let me first congratulate the board chairperson on your nomination as the chair of PRASA. Welcome to Team Transport. We call ourselves Team Transport here. Chair, let me summarize my questions then. I think the government has invested a lot in transport in a way of trying to address the imbalance of the past. Because, say, you have the majority of our people living in places like Mdantsane, Khayelitsha, Soweto, Motherwell, and KwaMashu. My question would be around the affordability when this new technology is introduced, so that the target group is able to move from the places of from where they stay to the places where they work and to the places where they seek employment. My other take would be around the issue of around the risk that have been identified by PRASA. They have mentioned low staff productivity as one of their risks, which results in poor performance. Is there any program in place? I've seen the one that they have highlighted, but I still have the question in mind. If there is any place just to motivate the staff that they have there. The other one would be around the commitment that they are making of producing 65,000 direct jobs, direct and indirect. Have they leveled the ground such that the colleges and universities here in South Africa will respond? Is the curriculum there relevant? Have they checked on that? That some of the trains are manufactured outside South Africa. Are our universities offering a relevant curriculum? And also that their presentation is silent about their financial story. As a public entity, I think it is one of their requirements to have their financial statements audited yearly. I would like them to give us just a little bit of their story, whether good or bad, but just to tell us their story. I think let me end there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Husina.
Thank you, Chair. There was a reflection on the recent history of PRASA, and I was very impressed with the presentation that really conveyed a lot of confidence in the way going forward. And I'm basically I'm referring to the 5-point plan, which to me is really core and the 5 points sort of came up while the presentation was presented, and then you presented the 5 points, and I couldn't think of anything else, so that's really encouraging. But a growing concern is the interconnectedness of transport, and you know, we tend to get very specialized in our mandate, and then we find a growing disconnectedness between the different transport types. And I'm pledging for a sort of a spatial planning development awareness to network and to extend the mandate as such to reach out and develop a certain capacity then towards commuter precincts, like integrated taxi, bus and rail precincts, because like we all know, we plan everything with regard to transport and we neglect pedestrian planning, which is very important, so because most people walk and until they get to some form of transport. But the other question that I have refers to, I think it was slide 22, where we had a very nice slide indicating the renewal and refurbishment projects, and the component that I missed there, and that is with the underlying sentiment of not getting into trouble again, like we were and like you so skillfully sort of managed yourself out of. Against that background of a well indicated projection of the future, where's the needs line that should be supported within that frame of thinking? We are planning, and you are skillfully planning and indicating refurbishment and renewal and so on, but what would the needs look like against that graph? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Take it like that. Honorable De Freitas, your next honorable speaker you'll be following. Just like that, 3 minutes each.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you to Mr. Matana, who always motivates me with what he's doing, the exciting work. He knows that I'm very supportive of the fact that absolutely rail must be the backbone of our public transport system, and we must stop building these damn roads and start doing more rail. So good to him, and I would encourage that the rest of the committee give him his full support. The other thing just very quickly, Chair, is I think we should take up the offer of the CEO to visit Kalfontein. And then just a few questions that still worry me, and they're the following. If Mr. Botana can unpack for us the whole situation with Transnet, their rail, their usage, and process rail and usage, and how that, if there is any sort of light into resolving and some kind of cooperation, because I know there's always been problems between those two entities. Then, listening to his presentation, in all my readings, I got the impression that it would be, with the refurbishment and so forth, new improved similar trains, but he now tells us that it's really high-speed rail. I just want to confirm that is the case. And if that is the case, then, or is it a combination of both? And if that is the case, either way, is if you could just tell us about the gauging, the current gauges and future and so forth, and how that's also interlinking also with Transnet's network. Then, just to comment on what you said about graffiti and eating on the trains and so forth, I think we need to move as South Africa to aspire to become a first world country. That is what we should aspire for, so that all our people become at a certain economic level, that we eliminate poverty as much as possible, or at least bring up the poverty line so that poor people would be kind of rich in comparison to other countries. And in that comes certain responsibilities. And I think we need to tell our public and educate our public that it is not acceptable to put graffiti, to eat at trains, and to keep our assets, which are our assets, because we're all taxpayers, to keep them good, to keep them clean. We don't graffiti our kitchen and our dining rooms and so forth. Why should we do it elsewhere? So, and it's been proven that it can be done in the Gautrain, and I was in fact on it yesterday, and I continuously feel proud when I'm on it, and I can see that the international world is seeing this. How clean and efficient and wonderful we can be as South Africans. So I want us to encourage that. And then lastly, something that sprung up to me when Mr. Montana gave his presentation, he said it's a 40-year plan. Has he looked at beyond 40 years? You know, the old government kind of bought these trains in the 60s and 70s mainly, and didn't worry about 20, 30 years' time. Are we looking at that? Are we projecting? Are we budgeting? And are we planning? Because in 40 years' time, the new technology we're getting next year will be old technology. are we looking at that? Are we kind of projecting so that we're constantly upgrading and modernizing and improving and making us proud? Thank you very much. Next.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to begin by thanking the presentation. The presentation has assisted to open our eyes to see the necessity of overhauling the whole system. So I think it's a good thing, though it remains to be seen, like my colleague has mentioned, the issue of the cost to passengers. I just want to check if PRASA has a competitor. And because in your fact sheet summary, you mentioned trains, buses, and where there is a bus, there will be a taxi. So one would want to know as to how do you intend keeping your competitors and not enemies to avoid maybe situations like the one that we see taking place in Ilanga next to us as we are here. Yeah, that is all I wanted to check the issue, because if you do not have a competitor, one also would be skeptical to say, should it happen that the cost of these new trains become so high, where are the poor people going to run to if you are the only ones, because they will be left with no choice but to stick with what is costing too high. Thank you.
What about Taka?
First of all, no, thank you very much, Chair. And I also just want to echo or follow my colleagues with the presentation that has fairly clarity of direction. And, well, of course, the with the passion in which is presented. I have just a quick question. I think the direction is all what we support. We support the direction that the PRASA is taking us to. I think as a committee we understand where this is going, and we understand the value in terms of the public transport and particularly the rail as the kind of spine or center nerve of the public transport. So I think we agree with that. The just a few questions I just want to present that the CEO as well as the chain that referred they should going forward. The one of the things that in the project of this magnitude, it would require a lot of management structure to manage whole lots of diverse things that happens, including the program of managing that. One of the things that worries us as a committee, as we said, is always the issue on the project of this magnitude, what tend to be the cost overrun. The cost overrun and the price increase as a result of the cost overrun and the budget managing the project. I mean, if you look at the lots of projects that we start with this kind of, and then it grows because of time frames, shifting out of time frames, cost increases coming into. So it begs the question as to the skillful way in which the project and the contract is entered into. Who carries the cost overrun if the cost overrun is not the result of the party X? So we've seen that a lot in the cost overrun issue, that it end up with the public having to carry the can. So I think that issue for me is what has to be managed going forward. The second one, it will be the skills aspect. The skills, clarity of skills transfer, other ways to build local-based skill capacity in the process for the years to come, including the year of maintenance going forward. So that aspect as part of the project itself going forward is going to be critical, because at that point when you get to that, it has to be locals that manage and maintain going forward. And you don't have to have a dollar rand exchange in terms of the capacity and skills that has to be bought elsewhere. The third, to 3 seconds. Oh, wow. The 3 seconds, I think I would have liked to talk about Moloto. That's just a lead period, Moloto development corridor, the lead period from the time of the salt turning. That clarity of that, I think, is important. And the kind of jobs that we anticipating to create as we go about the 51 billions and. Thank you, Chair. Really pushed.
Chair, just to greet you, Honorable Subande.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to make seconds instead of 3 minutes. Chairperson, number one, you know, I was listening to some of my colleagues next to Babu Ramatlakane raising the issue of competitors. But sometimes we're making a mistake. We don't calculate the people who are using the railway. But coincidentally, we're so blessed. We're having Abu Babu Sangwin. Maybe my colleague is not aware, because they are key in this issue which we're discussing about Abu Babu Bani. And I'm happy Babu Sangwin is here. I think we are on the right path. For an example, we were together, we were there, when you were launching one of your programs. You call it a bridge, what, in KZN. That is a process. That's what we're expecting. And of course, I wish my comment, Chairperson, that program must continue, like to cover such like Northern Cape and some of these where we are facing serious problems. Actually, everywhere. That program is very healthy. You are on the right path. And then, what is my worry then, which I wanted to raise also to prove before I continue, the issue of the procurement process. I think that shows that there is something that is happening, unlike when you come and give presentation while they are quiet. But now it shows, to an extent, we were there when you were launching the project of Kibela. All the committee members were there. And also then, let me come to this one. Please, I wanted you to request only a few things. Like all of us who are here, including the people which I've mentioned before, that what programs do you have to educate communities about how to preserve or protect, number one, the railway line, and also to avoid the stealing of cables, and also the vandalizing and the burning down of our coaches and trains. Because, you know, it doesn't help that you rebuild the site, and at this site there are people who are doing the things which are very far. I think we must have this project to educate our people how to protect our own things. And then also, on page 24, you spoke about the establishment of the Rail Academy Center of Excellence. Umama, they were raised at this thing. I don't know which when, by when, about that thing is going to start, because I think also it's going to be very, and it is very relevant for the proposal which are doing in terms of the line scheme of the new technology. And then also, you spoke on page
24. Page 26, you spoke about the recruitment and training of 30 young engineering professionals. I'm not sure what criteria we're going to use and on how it's going to benefit us, because it's also relevant for the new technology that we do have, and it must be geographically spread. Why I'm saying that? So that the people will, most of the time, were so disadvantaged to get an advantage at least to be taken on board. And by when? It's very much important, because as you indicated that with your proposals, you indicated that from this year and next year, some of the locomotives are coming. We must be advanced on this one. And then the last one, you spoke about the partnership with the engineering department of University of Stellenbosch. Also, same page. I think that one, also what I wanted to request, I wanted to encourage you to continue lobby with the other facilities so that this thing must be geographically spread, because it doesn't mean that we wanted to bring the new trains only, but also to protect them. Thank you very much. I'll put my case there.
Thanks, Professor. Let me just put my views in and give it the Indambogu effect. It's nice to have power for a few seconds. Now, Chair, my question relates to the contracts of, you know, the projects in this code, these trains. Babu C, Group C, Olapa has mentioned that he's going to do this in about 10-year batches. But I want you to give us a clarity. How many are you going to produce? And how far are you now? We know that you're still expecting about, say, what, 20 that you're going to receive. But then, as we sit down as the portfolio committee in assessing your, you know, progress in terms of work, what should we expect probably in the delivery in terms of the financial years? The other question relates to, you know, I believe that all of us, we were concerned about the skills that, you know, you can't be able to retain any skills. But I'm trying to try and check whether, what is your retention strategy, ensuring that at least you hold those skills that you're having, because you say they are losing them, they're going overseas, otherwise they get recruited by other companies. But the other aspect is that my view, I hear that, you know, you must try and align yourself with the universities and stuff, but in terms of the technical skills, you know, for example, that you must liaise with the VTEC, which is the Technical Vocational Education, which is the former FETs. But I would also urge that probably you must be able to liaise probably through the DG of the department with the DG of the higher education and training, so that at least there can be that alignment of the skills retention in South Africa. The Department of Higher Education and Training is given the task of ensuring that skills in South Africa is retained. But they're going to be able to do that if they're going to be able to know what are your expectations, they can be able to liaise with their educational facilities. But the other thing that I request, that you must be able to assist us. You know, what a portfolio committee of eastern transport, you provided bursaries. Bring those forms so that you can start this. This portfolio committee must distribute those forms. It must be asked that lead by example. You must give these forms and recruit these young people to go and study so that they can be able to come and help South Africa. But if, you know, they just being mentioned there, they are just glossy for us. They are not being user friendly. We've got constituencies that we must be able to give and recruit so they can be able to come and assist South Africa. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. And thanks for the presentation, the CEO. We are highly behind you, this Prasa. Truly is doing a good job. About 550 million kilometers. It's too much if you're going up and down helping the people. However, the document, Chairperson,
we heard that we'll receive the other document, but most of the presentation, the document was not according to what we have here. So, like in page 3, the document we have is talking about 33 billion, 2013-2014, but in the presentation it's 36 billion. So, the other question which I want to ask is about the new trains which are coming. As you said that they will come and interact with the old one, what about the railway line? Are they going to use the same railway line infrastructure? And you talk nice about the new trains which are coming with the safety doors and everything. Can't we do something about these doors to the old trains, because we have a high volume of people who are hanging around the trains? Can't we modify some times for preventing our youth to hang outside the trains? And the issue of cameras inside the trains in terms of the safety, what can we do maybe as a contingency plan to avoid crime in our trains? The other question is about the financial status of the PRASA. How clean is your books in terms of the audit reports? We never heard about them for the maybe financial years which we passed. And there's another question which I need clarity about it. I once heard about some members of the staff who were, I think, dismissed about this union and recognition of the union. How far is that litigation of that case? And the issue of the skill development in terms of the youth and women empowerment at PRASA. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have two questions or comment. The first one is that for sure PRASA is aware that government is trying to improve integrated public transport system. And besides the development of rail, there is also the development of BRT systems. And as of now, there is no adequate scale in terms of developing the BRT system. So PRASA, as a public entity, but also owning a bus company in Autopex, can't it turn around that business and assist government to implement the BRT system? It can assist in terms of creating jobs and also supplying the skills needed in terms of growing our economy. So maybe something that PRASA can look at. The second one, Chair, is that I think also PRASA should take advantage of the Special Planning Integrated Land Use Management Act in terms of integrating transport plans both at provincial and municipality level. If PRASA can also assist, because anyway, your plans that you have, you're going to implement them on either provincial or municipality soil. So it can be in isolation of these two structures. And we know there's no capacity of transport planning at the municipality and provincial level. So how can PRASA assist in terms of ensuring that even the rural areas or the so-called rural towns at one stage or the other also have an improved, efficient public transport system? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to be speaking to the issues. I'll just directly give it to PRASA so that they can be able to capture and respond to as many questions as is possible. Who starts?
Chairperson, I thought that let me respond on the things that are on the department so that PRASA can follow in terms of implementation. I will start with the issue on economic regulation that PRASA, I think when the group CEO respond, will respond on the relationship between PRASA and Transnet and the like. What we are doing in the department is we are focusing on establishing a single transport economic regulator So, but in the interim, we have what we call interim economic regulator, wherein the department has already entered into a formal agreement with Department of Enterprises to ensure that there is interim capacity that will translate in a future stay, that is a single transport economic regulation. So I think PRASA will respond based on that framework that I've indicated. Secondly, that I, something that I also want to indicate is the issue of the issue on the poor visas affordability and fares. It is the responsibility of government to determine fares, especially with regards to PRASA. And the National Land Transport Act capacitate government to establish a national public transport regulator. So I'm happy to indicate to the committee that the cabinet has recently approved the nominations of various members who will form part of this team, which will be dealing with public transport regulation, especially regulating the fares. And I think we are also not in the space of leaving PRASA at the moment as government from giving it subsidies. So the issue of poor people will always be accommodated within that context. I think the last one is on the... I would like PRASA to respond on everything else that has to do with Moloto. And then I will respond on the issue of skills development. What happened is that after we have completed the feasibility study on the new rolling stock, I want to talk about this 65,000 jobs and also the issue of skills development within the rail industry in general. That also will link with PRASA Academy. We entered into a formal MOU as a department with the Department of Higher Education, including our TETA, in terms of ensuring that the skills development issues that are raised by the rail industry going forward are taken care of. Another program that is also going on in the department is that we are using the approved skills to fund various universities. So since that the rail industry is looking for additional capacity in terms of skills development, we have requested the team that is dealing with this to re-enter into a new memorandum of understanding with the current term of government, so that we can, in the next 5 years, we'll be able to influence those universities to also consider, it's not only rail, it's rail and also maritime studies that are prioritized for these centers of higher learning in the various universities. If I can mention, Chairperson, the universities that we are talking about, which come into my mind now, we've got University of KwaZulu-Natal, University of Pretoria, University of Johannesburg, Stellenbosch, and University of Cape Town. Those are the ones that are coming in my mind. I'm not saying there are not others. They are just to inform the committee that we are working on these things to ensure that we deal with the matters. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the group CEO can take off.
Thank you, Mr. Maluleka. Thanks, Chair. I'm going to move with speed. I think hopefully I've captured all the detailed questions, and I think thank the honourable members for their support and guidance. I think that's well appreciated by PRASA. I think that the indeed government has invested a lot in public transport over the past 8 years. I think if you look at the period leading up to the 2010 FIFA World Cup and beyond, the state has put in excess of 150 billion rands into public transport. So it tells you that we've moved quite a lot, and I think that's very important. We've never had this kind of investment
in public transport in a long time. So part of what we see is actually a revolution in transport, and I think that if we don't recognize that, we're going to miss what we need to do. Of course, if you go to a province like Gauteng, you come to the Western Cape, some of the transport systems and infrastructure has been delivered, but not all of them speak to each other, of course. So we still have to make sure that we bring that connection, that links between these, so that they can speak to each other in a more efficient way, as it were. But I think that there's no doubt that investment by government is continuous. And I think, Chair, moving forward, we are seeing, if you look at the government's infrastructure investment, which is over 1.3 billion rands, you'll see that about 800 million rand of that investment is in transport. And you'll see that PRASA plays quite an important role, and you see Transnet. Of course, Transnet investment is not always coming from the national fiscal, but it's raised on the strength of its own balance sheet, and it's raised out there. But there's a massive investment. So it tells you that transport is key for you to achieving your sustainable economic growth and development. And therefore, the current investments that are underway, they're telling you a story. I mean, as PRASA is doing this work, Transnet, freight rail, I mean, it's introducing, by its own new locomotives, is building new lines to support the economy in various lines. And so we are keeping sight of what is being done. And I think that moving forward, there's no doubt in my mind that the country will get the benefit of this kind of investment. The issue of affordability is a very important one, but I think that Mr. Maluleke touched onto that particular question. I just want to deal, of course, so that we don't even preempt the work of that team. He mentioned two important issues. Metro rail services in particular continue to be subsidized. For every rent we get, the passenger literally pays about 50 cents, and in some instances, the passenger was paying even less. Less than that. I mean, they were paying in some instances 38, for every rent, they were paying 38 cents. People do not know that in South Africa, every day people travel to work by train, by bus, and everything. That government every year spend in excess of 6 billion rand subsidizing people to go to work, and this subsidy comes in the form from the Department of Transport to PRASA on the one hand. And part of it goes to buses, the buses that the PATCO, in Cape Town, Golden Arrow, all these buses are highly subsidized. And it's something that South Africans think that they're paying, but these are highly subsidized services to enable them. So for us to operate these services, they are subsidized by government. And I think it's very important for us to talk about that, and the public should be aware of that. I don't think that we are going to move away from that. I think the government policy is very clear. Currently, of course, that we are not, by international standards, we are not doing well. If you look at households, particularly poor households, they are paying over 30% of their disposable income on transport. The government policy says they must pay far less than that. And that has to do with the function of our special arrangements, people living far from places of work and everything. I do not believe that with the new system we can afford to even put the burden on the poor households. I think the very nature of the system is that it is based on one thing. It's not based on the fact that we're going to recover the money. We must recover the money. Currently, people on some of our lines, on average, they pay 6 rands. When they get into a taxi, they pay 8 rands, 24 rands. So it's very, very cheap. If you look at monthly tickets, sometimes it costs monthly tickets about some of them 100 rands and everything. So depending on which corridor you are in, but generally, almost 2/3 of the cost of traveling by rail is subsidized by government, and that is very important. So I want to assure Honorable Teko Sofita that I don't think that there's going to be a point that we're going to move. On poor staff performance, I think that, of course, that productivity, we've identified this as a risk if we have got new trains, but you still have people who don't care about the customers, then we're not going to succeed. Of course, if you ask me as a CEO and say, how do you motivate a CEO, I'm going to look at the chairman and say, Fagimalu Zabona. But But we're putting the programs. I think that we, for example, our customer services people who collect the money, who interact with the customer, I think that I think that if you look at what we are doing, you'll actually see that we have increased on the training of people. We've looked at when you look at our financial numbers, we've looked, for example, at the ratios, and we find that the ratio per employee is very low, which means the income we generate per employee, particularly on the 8,000 metro rail employees, has to change in a very big way. Now you must have a combination of things. One of the things we found as a major problem is the fact that our people worked overtime, but most of that overtime is not productive overtime. We had to restructure that. We had to negotiate what we call a shift system into the environment. But also we realized that when we do that, we're actually creating many job opportunities, as it were. Of course, the remuneration itself plays a major role, because I think, for example, we, for employees in our rail sector in particular, one of the things they get is what you call a gain share, that if they exceed their targets, for the annual targets at the end of the financial year, once you receive the audited financial statements, they do receive what you call a portion of that. They will give that back to them. It's practice, so it's part of motivating them. So training, but also ensuring that as managers we manage what is expected of employees. And of course, we've got a change management program currently. I just finished on a national roadshow with our employees, so that we prepare them for the new environment as it is. So I think, Chair, that we do pay attention to it. We've got a complete program. And I think that I didn't show one of the slides, I didn't speak to it, but I'll touch on it about the particular when you deal with the skill side of the thing. So it plays quite a major role, as it were. The creating the jobs, of course, the 65,000 that I showed was for the period that we're in. That is for the 20 year, but I think for the first 10 years of the contract, we spoke about 33,000 jobs that will be created. And if you look at the feasibility study, it identified even per sector which jobs are going to be created and all of those things. And I think that we should be able to do that. Yes, we spoke about our collaboration with the University of Stellenbosch. And there, let me emphasize that it's not through for the entire engineering sector, but it is them helping us to sustain the current fleet. So it is a mitigating strategy in terms of them helping us on the engineering side, because they've done a lot of research on this area. Because you know, remember, the different universities have got different capabilities. If you go to the University of Johannesburg, when it comes to transport planning, transport modeling, they're very good in terms of that. But when you go to University of Stellenbosch, we find that they've actually helped us to bring back some of the reliability that we want. So it's a special program. They're looking at, for example, some of what we call critical mission sectors that undermine the performance of a train, including the relationship between the impact of the wheel on the track and all of those things. So these are the kind of scientific work that is being done, and I think, but that is not to the exclusion of the other universities that are there. Mamutego, it was deliberate that I was silent on the financials of PRASA, because we will table the audited financial statements at the end, I think at the end of the month, and then those will be dealt with properly. I think the chair will be invited to come and present and deal with the numbers and all of those things. The good news is that in those financials, even though the auditors have dealt with the numbers, they're busy, of course, with finalizing the audit report with our team, but I must say that our numbers will show a 336 million rand profit. Of course, in our case, there's no profit, but there is what we call a surplus. So I'll assure honourable numbers that in fact, if you analyse our numbers over the years, we had budgeted for a loss, and the reason why we budget for a loss is because the long distance service that we've been asked to run by government continue to run it, and it's costing us a lot of money. But I'll assure the honourable members that when the annual report is tabled, you'll see that we're talking about the 336 million rand positive, as it were. So I'll assure you of that. I think that our both the quality and the nature of our financials. But I think we'll deal with that, Chair, request once the Minister of Transport has formally tabled the annual report there to the House. I also, Chair, well, I'm happy with the comments made by Honourable Hansing. I think that they are very important, and I'm actually quite pleased that Honourable Members are emphasising on this integrated transport planning, particularly in terms of the what you spoke about, the precincts. We talk about what we call transit-oriented developments. I mean, if you look at Gauteng, for example, we are working with the city, or rather with the province, where we are sponsoring some of these transit-oriented developments and mixed developments in some of the stations. I'll tell you that Pinaspoort, Jamestown, Vereeniging, Krugersdorp, I think there's Leralla, we are sponsoring, we are funding them a rent for a rent, where we are working together in terms of making sure that we create those and there's that kind of integration. I think there's always the risk that when you specialize on rate, you look at that. But the truth of the matter is that, and I think that your observation is very important, Honourable Member, because the truth of the matter is that each of these public transport modes have got their own strength. Rail is strong only in high-volume corridors. It's high capacity. You need it on Mabopane line. You need it on the Khayelitsha, on Michelle's Plain line, and on Kwamashu line. But we know that the rail is not as flexible as a taxi. So in corridors where you need pick-and-drop services, taxis is the best route. There are corridors that where bus is suitable. Now, the challenge for transport planners is to ensure that we then plan and use the strength of those modes and allocate those modes in corridors where they can perform to the better. When we talk about an efficient transport system, is when, and we've got a number of instruments as government, including how we license on certain corridors and everything, and what conditions we put to achieve that kind of goals that we want. So I think that is very important, and I'm fully in support of what you say. If you look at Park Station today, I think that one of the major things is that it is a major integrated facility. Once you're standing in Park Station, you can connect to the rest of the country by taxi or by bus. You can connect to the whole of Gauteng, and most importantly, you can connect to the rest of the SADC region. You can get a bus to Malawi, to Zambia, to Zimbabwe, to Lesotho, and that's what it is. If you go to Cape Town Station, you find that kind of integrated thing, because in fact, even the taxi thing is built on top of our mall, which the city is leasing from us. If you go to Johannesburg, the very same mall behind Park Station is a Prasa property, but that is leased so that we can have integrated services that are there. Yes, we haven't gone too much that far. We still need integrated transport, some of the integrated transport solution. One of them is ticketing. And I'll tell you that currently we are busy with the city of Cape Town to make sure that with their strategy on transport for Cape Town, we're working quite well with the team there in making sure that we've even agreed to a number of things that they can introduce an integrated ticketing solution, and Metrorail will be part of that. They can introduce a single brand for public transport. We'll agree to that, and also on security in respect of public transport. So I welcome that. I'm very happy with the thing. When you ask about the demand, and I'm going to be very quick because of time, our demand, we've done, for example, if you look at the number of our trains, out of the 7,224 trains, we just need just over 5,000 of these coaches to satisfy existing demand. The rest of them are aimed at satisfying demands up to 2040 and beyond. So a plan for the future, but also that if you look at it, that the nature of our cities are very important. If you analyze our corporate plan, we're actually looking at the growth in our cities. That in about 2030, we're going to have a big, big problem, and that is why this program has got to succeed, so that we can meet what is a massive growth in the cities by that time. Honourable Defraitors, again, I think thanks very much. I know that you've given us the support, but most importantly, you've also engaged with us to give us your support, but also to discuss constructively with us some of what you regard as concerns. And I think that you have reaffirmed that very strongly. We are working quite well with Transnet. I think the discussion between us and Transnet are good. I think that that is very important that are there. Let me add, of course, a rider for that. We've got a lot of policy issues. Brian Molef and I, we talk quite often, we solve the problems together, and I think that recently, of course, we've been asked by government that you can't fight in the public, you've got to solve it in-house, and we've taken that instruction very seriously. But there are a number of issues of a policy nature that needs to be solved. For example, if we are having two entities and you have to negotiate access to the network, that's a policy issue. If you have, for example, you've got tariffs, the rate that you charge is a policy issue. And I think that the Department of Transport, through its rail policy, is trying to create that policy environment. So hopefully, when that is implemented, we'll put that behind us so that it doesn't depend on the fact that Brian and Lucky Mundana can work together, but it depends more. He's got a good policy base for a sustainable future, as it were. The point about gauges, I think that I'm saying we need both. We need three types of systems in our own rail system. We need a commuter system that we want, and that is why our tender, Honorable Mulaudzi, stipulated that the new trains that are built should be for the current gauge, because we don't need a higher gauge for the commuter network. So we just have to maintain it at the highest level and that it responds to the times. You're not going to have them, these trains running at 160, 180. It would be an exception even with 160. Commuter rail, even on a high-speed rail, on an environment of standard gauge, they run at 90 up to 120 kilometers. So we need that. We still need that part. And we, of course, need in the middle what we call a light rail solutions. And that means trams in some of the cities, as well as monorail in some of them. So there is a space for light rail in our country, and I think we've explored that. So that's one of the major things we've got to do. And, of course, the future of intercity. I don't see how we can win the game between Johannesburg.
Let me just quickly interject. Honorable members, the chairperson of the board is leaving, rushing for the flight. We'll just reduce it.
Thank you, Chair. I thought he was undertaking to pay me a good bonus, but my chairman is not that kind, Chair. He's a slave driver, but not that kind. Chair, I think that on the gauge side, I think that if you look at Johannesburg, Durban, you look at Moloto, I think that it's quite clear that the future we've got to look at speeds of 250 kilometers to 350, and it's something that in many countries they created. And I think the technology today allows us where you have a train with an adjustable bogey where it goes into high speed and automatically goes into a narrow gauge as it is. So the world is changing. The technology justifies those kind of solutions. So, but the key thing is that how do you ensure that this becomes part of a single network? And I think to plan the entire public transport network. And I think that's what the public transport strategy of the department is trying to address, to make sure that they speak to each other. BRTs must speak to buses, and they must speak to rail as it were. I agree with the other things that the Honorable De Freitas has raised about educating the public, and I think there's commitment that we work with the relevant structures so that we keep those standards, not for other people, but for ourselves. And I think that is very important, so I welcome that. We must keep the train schemes. We are putting a lot of cleaning companies as well as cooperatives to clean the trains, and we must see the results come into that. The designs of the trains, you'll see that we are not saying that we are planning for 40 years. We are saying these trains are designed for 40 years. But our strategic plan, which I think at some stage we'll come back to talk to the committee, you'll see that it's long-term. It's looking at new corridors that we need to talk about. And also it's also looking where other modes of transport will be more efficient than rail, and that's what we are looking at. I think that's where the integrated issues are. Honorable Mabika, I think, has raised an important issue. Of course, he's touched on the issue of cost, which I won't go much into that because I've touched on into that early, except to reaffirm the assurance that we'll never put the burden of transport cost, of high cost, to pay this service. We need to ensure that we increase the patronage, and we've got the mix. Rail must become, as part of public transport, a mode of choice, not a mode of force, meaning therefore that it must not only be for poor people who don't have an option. It must be, because of the nature of the services, the accessibility, the security, and the quality of the service, People must say, I'm prepared to leave my vehicle at home or a station to jump into that. And that is the main issue that we want to do. And therefore, you see that the numbers and the quality should be able to create a fair structure that actually ensures that it's more balanced than the current environment that it is. Yes, we've got competition as PRASA. On the roadside, we've got competition. Our bus services has got a lot of competition, operating in a highly competitive environment, and we do compete with the taxis, particularly our city-to-city buses. They compete a lot with taxis. On the rail side, of course, we are a monopoly. We don't. So we've got two sides to our leg. But I think that Honorable Sibande raised an important issue, because at this point in time, we are not going to be able to open it up in that way, because then it will not be profitable and work for everyone based on the numbers. So you need to grow that, raise the level of the service, and then you can then consider. However, you can have in the short term what we call negotiated access for private users who want to come on certain corridors, for example, and we start to allow for that kind of competition, but in a managed way. I think Honorable Ramatlakane can emphasize the issue of destructive competition. But where the user base is very small, of course, that you're going to have many operators, but all of them not operating on a profitable basis. Now, if you have that, then you're not going to have anyone investing in the future capacity and all of that. And that has to be avoided at all costs. So we have to make the right kind of decisions that are there. We do accept the caution. I don't even want to respond to that, Honorable Ramatlakane, because I think what you say, mega projects have got a big problem. The first one, of course, is the issue of cost that can go. Fortunately, on this one, we've got a commitment over the next 10 years given by the Minister of Finance, because this contract was then formally gazetted. It doesn't depend on Lucky and everything, and even the escalation costs were negotiated based on what with the relevant team in Treasury, and not on that basis that it was issued. So hopefully we'll be able to do that, but the major risk, of course, remains the issues about the rand-euro fluctuations, and we've seen it has turned in a very big way, and it has had such an impact on us. Fortunately, this contract just came in when the situation is, but we've seen on the locomotive side, as well as other assets that are there. And the higher your localization, it's better for you to protect yourself around that. So costs are going to be very important, but quality. Because let me tell you that if your contractor wants to make profit, they're going to look at cutting some of the costs. I'm not saying that's what will happen, but that is a major risk. And whether PRASA has got the relevant, the right kind of skills to manage that, I think, Honorable Ramatlakane, that's what you're raising. And I think that's what we're trying to strengthen our engineering team to be able to do that. The contract provides for the transfer of skills in terms of the capacity and ability to build a train. As we speak, South Africa had the capacity in the 70s to build a commuter train. But to build a modern train today, we've got companies that can build components of these trains, but they can't build a fully-fledged modern commuter trains. And that is why one of the features of this contract is what we call product evolution facility, so that technology is transferred within the new factory, so that South Africa can retain that technology for many years to come. So basically, we wanted to appoint a technology partner so that we can have that transfer, and I think that we've done that quite well. You've asked me a difficult question, and I saw that Mr. Maluleka avoided that deliberately on the lead period for Moloto. And I want to be very honest about what it is. There is an expectation that Moloto will be built in the next 2 years. It can be. If we take the standard on these contracts and we look at the thing, it's going to be, because of the nature of the project, yes, the work will start early, and I think that the handover will mean the commencement of that in terms of route determination. And you may want to start the construction program in terms of components at different spots that are connected. And we saw how train doing that quite skillfully, so we can learn from that so that we can do that. But on average, a program like this will take you a decade to build on the ground. The issue, the fortunate thing about Moloto is that because it's a different kind of solution on rail, bus, or rail, public transport as well as road, so the sequencing of those could take, but the overall investment can take in that, and the community, particularly in the in the in that region there can start to get the benefit and start to see some activities immediately. But the road, the rail side to be operational won't happen tomorrow, Chair. And I think it's very important that in the communication, once we accelerate, this is almost 140 kilometers between Pretoria and Siyabuswa. Gautrain was over 86 kilometers, and it took far long because of the complexity. If you're going to do, for example, the tunneling and everything, and I think that we need to ensure that we accelerate it. We've lost almost 7 years in this program, but I do not believe that we should be able to do that as it were. Honorable Sibande, thanks very much. I think that indeed you supported us with the launch of both the modern Bridge City facility when it was launched, as well as the thing. I think the observation that the procurement is currently underway is very important. Your point about educating the public, I think that we've got that program in place. I think that I do speak, the CEO of our rail division engages quite a lot. We've just signed a new memorandum of agreement with the United Voice of Commuters in terms of some of the things that needs to be done in terms of raising that. But we still have to go strongly in radio into communities to make sure that some of this work is being done in a massive way. Rail Academy, we've got an element of it that we've created in behind Park Station. I think that we've created that. But what we are referring to here is that when we accepted the bid from Thales, one of the key things that they wanted to help us to build a modern rail academy. We are finalizing that with them as part of that contract. That rail academy will help to train not only people in Trasa, but it means that the people within SADC and the continent can actually send their people into that academy. So it will be to the benefit of the continent and around that issue that we have. If you look in our final slide, for example, in respect of skills, I didn't talk much about that, but you'll see that we've already identified some of the skills that we have. I think Honorable Khadede spoke about the bursaries. The past 3 years, we've been giving almost about 500 bursaries to learners at tertiary institutions and internal part-time, as well as our own employees, and particularly with the emphasis on engineering, as well as on the financial side of things. And we've been doing quite a lot of training on artisans. But we think that the rolling stock will give us the biggest number of investment in skills with 19,500, with the bulk of that being engineers. We've been recruiting engineers. In fact, I've been saying to my team, once you get the engineer, whether mechanical, electrical, and even in some instances on the infrastructure side, on the civil side, we've been taking them, and we don't ask because this business needs them particularly to do that. But as part of that, we've also have a memorandum of agreement with the Deutsche Bahn, the German operating system company, because they are helping us, because they are bringing a lot of skills into our business to make sure that they support our modernization program as it is. Yes, we accept the direction that we need to spread, particularly take the geographically spread areas around that. And let me assure the honorable members that we've been going around the country, particularly with what we call the Prasa Career Days. We've actually gone even to the rural areas. In the Eastern Cape, we've gone to Gauteng, where we've gone to areas in the East Rand, like in Sebokeng, for example. We've had 15,000 learners from around Gauteng, who we are encouraging to pursue their own careers around rail. Because you won't believe it. In the past, people used to be taught to be introduced to school around rail careers, but we are not doing it in the same. And again on your partnership with universities, Honorable Sibande, you'll see that countries like China, one of the major things they did is that they went to universities. Firstly, they sent their people to countries like Japan, Germany, and sent them there, their top engineers, to say, look at the technology and sit there. But they went to their universities, and they even got some of the universities to specifically focus on railways. We don't do that much. So we've got a faculty there and everything. Now, with what rail is suspected to play, maybe one of the universities, that's imagine the University of
Mpumalanga or Northern Cape, you convince them to say, focus on rail and producing the rail skills that you require. That would be a major revolution, as it were. China has done it, and today that is why it owns the technology that it learned from Europe over the last 20 years. And so, Honorable Ramatlakane, even with the product evolution facility on skills transfer, but if you don't have that residing, having the researchers and people doing work on that on a continuous basis, you may lose that. And I think our rail program would require that kind of intervention that we have. So when we lobby, we should lobby in terms of direction. That I've got only two to conclude. I think that if I could go into that, I think the period Honorable Kadebe asked, of course, we'll introduce the train, the first one that we'll get from Brazil. As we speak, some of the underframes and all of those for the new modern commuter trains of the 20 are being put together. We send the team to go and look at that. I was not part of that, but they've seen that being built. And I think that we are hoping that we'll then have the first one around October, November, start to test that and satisfy ourselves that we meet the conditions, and we'll start to roll out. That slide, of course, was showing to say the numbers per year over the 10-year period as it went. Then the second 10-year, we'll go out on another tender. But again, we'll have the factory. We may want to build it without actually going out on tender because the capacity we'll have in the country. Some of our own engineers, our top maintenance engineer, as an example, is a guy that after doing his maintenance thesis with the assistance and supervision at the University of Stellenbosch, the Germans wanted to take him to go and run their own maintenance consulting arm. And we have to retain the guy because if we lost him, it meant therefore that National will not have to do that. And part of it, the kind of offer they were putting on the table, We can do that, and some of it is to say to put a counter offer that has got attractive retention elements. But equally, we had to appeal to his sense of patriotism, and because we couldn't count. I mean, these guys provide you and your kids to come in there. They study, they travel in Europe by air or by ship at their own cost. You can't quite count on them. So we are doing quite a lot because we realize that the skills you need to retain. So we put a retention strategy in place. Of course, we don't believe that it should solely be based on the on bonuses alone, but it has to be a combination of things, including the fact that you have to pay to give these guys, when you pay them bonuses, you say your bonus can be only be paid. You accumulate it, but it can be paid either after 3 years or 5 years. So if you leave early, you lose it. Now, people don't want to lose such accumulation of money, so they stay there for a longer period that you want whilst you train new guys that are there. I support Godfrey. The strategy on skills and everything is guided by what the Department of Higher Education and Training. In fact, they met with us to give us a guidance, so that alignment is there. And I think that, of course, the issue of bazaar, you well said. I think we accept that. Thanks very much, Honorable Mlaudzi, on what you have said. Of course, I think that, yes, your criticism is correct, that we've given you a document and I've restructured it and included. So I think even when some of the questions were being asked, I didn't know which page you are because I'm looking at the new one. For example, you mentioned page 22. My page 22 is about the graph. It's not about the old one. But the information is the same. I just had to meet the deadline and submitting it and reworking it. So my sincere apology for that. Of course, now I've got the benefit of the audited financial statements. So that is why I could update and say we're sitting at just over 36 billion rand worth of assets. So that's what we have. New trains, as I said, will operate on existing tracks, but they need to be upgraded to absorb that. And the train doors, we have taken a decision. The rail safety regulator instructed us to make sure that all the trains, the doors have been changed. And I had to write back and say it's not practical because the cost of retrofitting and modification on the old trains, I said we'd rather buy new trains. And they worked with us. They accepted that reason. So the costs are huge because the wiring on the existing trains, it's just old technology that you spend. You so much capitalize on the existing trains in a way that is not desirable. So it's something that I just said no. So they said we'll give you the order
to shut it out and say, look, for the first time I'll go to court to challenge the state company because it wouldn't have made the economic sense. It would be in breach of the constitution and other law around that. On cameras, it's quite clear that there are certain things that we should be able to do, both the station and on board the trains, and I think we started rolling out. If you look at our speed gate project, it's a complete integrated security system. We arrested people who robbed one of our stations here, and the cameras were very important in terms of achieving that. So we are rolling out around that. You've raised the issue of the financial year. We are not hiding them. When the numbers come, we'll be there. You've also raised the issue of the youth and women's development. We've got the Women in Rail project. We put R1 billion, for example, to support that project so that women get involved in rail engineering. They get involved in our property side of things because we are also, it's one of our major services as well as in professional services. We are doing quite a number of projects. For example, with youth, we are targeting learners at grade 10 to 12. I think that we are putting a lot of resources there. We support also a program called Kutlwanong Math and Science so that we support learners, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal as well as in Soweto, to prepare them for matric. I think we're doing quite a lot. And currently we are putting together a public works type of work program where we're hoping that the Minister of Transport will announce, because we think that there we're mobilizing youth, particularly unskilled youth, to come into some of our own space for that. That includes, of course, youth inside PRASA who want the opportunity. Some of them want to go abroad to be trained for the new technologies that are there. I accept, Chair, in conclusion, what Honorable Bushielo is saying in respect of BRT as well as the thing. Of course, some of her proposals are radical. They would require that, for example, some of the provisions in the Legal Succession Act be amended accordingly so that we become a commuter transport company first and foremost, not a commuter rail in terms of that. It will also have to then also amend the second part that looks at us in terms of only intercity, because we can use the capacity to assist, for example, rural districts. So it is possible, but it will require the law to be changed. We work in terms of integrated transport planning. We are working with all the cities. I think we've got an agreement with the city of Cape Town, the city of eThekwini, the city of Johannesburg, in terms of how rail fits into that. It is the responsibility of municipalities in terms of the National Land Transport Act to make sure that there is integrated transport planning. So they must coordinate all of that, and we respect the law. Of course, some of them, they feel that they must go beyond that line and run operations. But we think for a developing country like South Africa, is something that is not advisable, because we can't sustain the investment, but also you're going to get these municipalities diverting the huge resources from major services that they require to provide rail. Because to lay out rail infrastructure, Chair, is very expensive in the short term, but in the long run, of course, the benefits are huge. Chair, I think those are the questions that we asked. I would apologize if I didn't answer any of the questions, but I think that is our plan, that is our strategy, and that's what the corporate strategy of PRASA speaks to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. I think the CEO, the other calling that you must take is to be a pastor or a preacher, because he can really preach and teach. We are better persons now than we were when we arrived in this office, in this meeting today. Gladly, I think what comes out very loud at the end of his statement is the fact that we have to look at legislation and also look at policies. But I also want to say to honorable members, I'm trying to make an arrangement with the chairperson of a portfolio committee on public enterprises so that we can be able to have a joint committee meeting where we will be able to deal with issues of Transnet, PRASA-related matters, where we believe we should be able to assist the department in going forward. Obviously, there may be some policy issues that both departments need to look into to make sure that they can be able to synergize. Because when you look at currently, particularly the rail tracks, that are owned by Transnet, many of them are damaged, and therefore it means in terms of the economic haulage and also commuter haulage, it becomes very difficult for Transnet to can be able to deal with those things. But I think I would like to thank the members of the community who are here from the United Commuter Voice. Yeah. I would also want to thank Baba Sangweni for being part of this meeting. I think we, as a committee, have been able to represent you fairly well, because as public representative, we are the voice of you in this hallowed precincts of Parliament, and I hope that we have been able to do well. STDG, Group CEO, everybody from the Department of Transport, thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we're left with one item. My proposal was that because we're going to plenary, we will deal with the item that is left for next week, because it's just minutes of the previous meeting, so that we are able to have just a comfort break before plenary starts. Thank you very much.